everybody. Welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, he's my brethren from another Metherin. He's Andy Asimakis. How you doing, buddy?
It's like PAX all over again.
It is.
I love the interviews post PAX. It's like it feels like we're still in Boston playing a bunch of games.
Yeah, it makes it feel like, you know, we're still special.
We are very special.
For a little while.
A little bit longer.
And joining us this week is Pedro Guerra, man of many hats over at Night Shift Games, developer of Elsie, a Technicolor hyperkinetic roguelike action platformer that we fell in love with at PAX East 2023. Pedro, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you guys for checking out Elsie.
How could we not? Yeah. Like, honestly,
after the email debacle, how can you not?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Oh, that was the best.
Okay,
I was gonna say, can we talk about your senior?
We need to talk about that. We need to talk about it just because of how. So first of all, it was probably the most perfect email list of people for that to happen with. Because everyone was like, oops, it's okay, don't worry about it. But yeah, somebody forgot to put blind copy, copied everyone. And then there was just a massive reply all that happened on your welcome, you know, come see us at PAX East. And we're like, yeah, we will. But also, whoops. I don't know. I thought it was funny and it was totally fine. And, you know, it was cute. And
I feel most people responded really kindly to it. I think we got a little lucky because they could have gone south real bad. but everybody, you know, most of the people that replied were like very friendly about it. And it's like, yeah, don't worry. And now this is just another game that I haven't heard of that I'm going to go check out now.
Hell so, yeah. I mean, that, it was almost as if it was planned, Pedro. It was as if it was planned.
I wish I was that next level genius and have the courage.
Well,
to do that
in your book, when you write about, you know, how to promote and do awesome video game things, this will be a chapter for you.
Right. That was I mean, I can't even take that credit. Our publisher, our communications manager at our publisher, was the one that sent out the email on our behalf. We've been talking about it for a bit. Like, hey, we got to send this stuff out before PAX. And then on that Monday before PAX, I see the email and I'm like, okay, this email's pretty cool. And then I see that he CC'd everybody. And I was like, oh, okay.
That's a bold strategy.
Yeah, I was like, that's kind of odd. But like, he's a professional. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Trust the process, man. Trust the process.
And that's how you become a senior communications manager.
That's right.
You know what he's doing.
Big dick moves. That's what that was.
I think he's actually the senior communications manager.
Hell yeah. Like, big dick move right there. Just like, yeah, I copied everyone. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. You're going to come see the game at PAX. That's what you're going to do.
I think some of the asshole replies, I was like, oh, I got to reply now. I can't not toss the hat in the ring. I was like, this is great. You're all amazing. Nice to meet you. My name is Andy.
Yeah, I mean, and that was really funny, honestly. I was just like freaking out at first, and then I'm like, huh, okay, I'll deal with this when I get out of here.
That was our pre-PAX Elsie experience, which of course when we got to the booth, like the first thing that was like, hey, sorry about the email. You're like,
no, but if the game was half as fun as the email chain, we're in for a good experience.
Indeed. Yeah. All right, Pedro. So now that we got that part out of the way, which is the part I'm sure you were hoping we would never mention during this 1 hour interview, but
I'm bringing this into every single thing.
You got to do
time
it.
I talk to anybody.
Self-deprecating humor.
We're doing a panel next year at PAX, Pedro, with you on it.
Yeah,
I'm down. Totally down.
PAX emails and you. What not to do and what the do's and do nots of PAX emails. All right, Pedro. Now that we're about 5 minutes into the show, tell everybody what Elsie is.
You kind of covered it. Elsie is a game that I'm working on with a small team here in Miami, Florida, and across other states and countries. It's a roguelike action RPG that's kind of really distinctive in the way that it plays and the style that we're kind of going for. Or I feel our art style it's a pixel art platformer. I feel there's like a lot of those right around, but I feel that ours looks familiar but a little different, right? I don't think I've ever seen a game that looks quite like our game or that tries to do a lot of like the things that we do, right? And we're not breaking any kind of mold. We're not like treading any like new ground or anything, but it's something that's just a little different than what you normally see. And I feel that's like our big attraction. And then what keeps people playing is like the gameplay, which we also try to spice up the game in such a way where a lot of platformers, everybody's played them. Mega Man has ruined an entire generation of games. But ours, it's like, okay, what if Mega Man, but almost every move in your kit is aggressive? What if almost every move in your kit does damage? Your dash isn't just for moving and dodging. It also damages. You have a dive attack because in Mega Man, you can't shoot down. So it's like, okay, so we're going to have you that when you can do a dive attack like from your jump that smacks people that also doubles as a movement. As a movement tool to bounce off like different things. Then you have your traditional like many weapons, and then kind of the biggest thing that sets us apart is we have a parry system, right? So in our game, you're rewarded for keeping the aggressiveness up, right? For jumping into combat, jumping in front of bullets, in front of attacks, using the parry, recovering energy, and then using your counterattack that becomes available right after you parry. All of these things also give you iframes, like invulnerability frames. So it's just, you want to just keep that ball rolling. There's also like augments and items that kind of play off that kind of stuff too. So it's definitely, it started off as very simple, like, Alex was like, okay, I just want to rebuild Mega Man, but a little different, a little roguelike. Sure, okay. And I said, oh, but what if, we added this thing to it? And what if we wanted to attack while we dash? Okay, so we had, and then just kind of started grabbing ideas from a lot of different places. And that was his vision, and he already had the game started. And I mean, I started on this game about like 5 years ago. The project itself, Elsie, is probably like 7 years old at this point.
Wow.
Awesome. Yeah, the first 2 years were basically scrapped. All that was kept is like some movement code. I think that's it. Nothing else from that game, I think, is left over. Because that's when I started, and I told him we're gonna scrap it. Like after he said I want to redo the game, I'm like, cool, we're going to redo all the art. And he's like, okay.
That's fair. What I like is that, so the roguelike or roguelite genre, like that whole subgenre, has many different ways that you can make a game, an action platformer, excuse me, I just hit my microphone, an action platformer different from others in the genre. What are the roguelike elements in Elsie? How are you playing with that formula?
Sure, yeah. So the roguelike element in Elsie, so every run's going to be different, right? Every run you start off at your hub. You can talk to a couple people. You can do a couple things here and there. But then when you start, all the rooms that you'll see are hand-created by us. We hand-design every room, but we stitch them together procedurally. So the rooms are always jumbled. They're always randomized. And then you always start off with like one weapon, one ability. And then as you level up, every time you level up, you get these augments. The augment pool is like 35 augments every time you level up. And each of those augments have like two more power-ups that you can get for them. So you level those up. That's always randomized. Every time you level up, you have no idea what you're going to get. The parts that you find in the run, the weapons that you'd find in the run, those are all procedural. But we do fine-tune the rooms by hand. And over time, we've also developed like almost like a difficulty curve that the more difficult that the rooms become, the more enemies that we let spawn in as well.
I was just going to ask that. Yeah. Cause if you're creating these rooms from scratch, that means you're creating, that at least means you should have enemy placement, enemy, patterns.
Right.
Cause there should be a little bit of familiarity, but if you're jumbling those rooms up, maybe a room that you saw in your first run in the beginning is now later down the line. So you adjust that curve a little bit if you're getting it a little later in your run.
Yeah. You'll see different enemies that pop up, maybe a couple of extra enemies as well. So
that's cool.
Yeah. That's going to need a lot of tuning passes like that as we wind down development.
Sure.
Yeah.
You need to add the words Mega Man X is fuck to the Steam page, because that is the first thing I thought of when I played this game.
So that's
the dashing, the jumping, the shooting, the wall clinging, it's all, I just thought this is just a rainbow explosion of colors Mega Man X.
Right. So it. So I feel that that is everybody's first impression because, right, like I said, mm-hmm. Mega Man ruined a lot of an entire generation. You see side-scroller platformer with bullets, you're like, that's Mega Man. And you know, that was definitely like one of the base, like one of the base inspirations. And I mean, you'll see throughout the game, if you play like the full game, there's Easter eggs to Mega Man X everywhere. Like literally in every level, there's at least one.
I love it.
Yeah. 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 I love the Mega Man series, the X series, huge, huge thing for me. And for Alex too, and everybody on the team, honestly, one of our artists, Danny, he's our lead environmental artist and he does some animations as well. On some of the bosses, we designed a couple of like the bosses, and yeah, and he loves Mega Man. He worked on like a Mega Man fan game, so we're just all real big Mega nerds.
Oh, I'm sure Andy's played it.
Yeah, what's the fan game? I'm very curious.
Oh my god, I would not know. I don't know if it's Mega Man corrupted or something. Maybe.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
I don't know. He might have worked on that one.
That's
I'm
like 12
sure.
years in the making or more.
Yeah, no, I mean we're old. Dude. Yeah, I mean, Danny's been working on art since like high school, or like since he was like 10. Like his entire family, like most of his family, is in the art industry, and he's just a huge fan, and he's been killer. He was actually, I think, the first artist that we brought on board after we got our publisher. We were like, okay, we need an environmental artist, and then he was recommended to us by Gerard. And we're like, okay, let's do it. And then, you know, we kind of hit it off and he's been making incredible stuff. Most of the stuff that you played in the demo was him. The first level, it was the only level that he didn't really get to like super design, but he did, he updated all of the tiles up to like our new standard. Cause after he started, we already had about three worlds more or less in like art wise. But then when he started, he kind of really elevated all the art in the levels. So then it's like, okay, Danny, we're going to give you these old tiles using the exact same spaces. Like, don't move anything around. Just in the same spaces, update these tiles. And yeah, man, it was like magic. Because at that point, we just grab them and drop them in. And they'll just replace the ones that were there, right? So, I mean, huge transformations. The first two levels are the Sky World and the Fire World had pretty significant transformation. They look a lot nicer, look a lot cleaner, a lot more updated. But our garden level just was insanely, insanely upgraded. That thing looked brand new, and it's probably our best looking level in the game.
Now, you name dropped Gerard a second ago. That is, if I'm not mistaken, the completionist, the YouTuber.
Yes.
How did that happen? How did he get involved in the publication of this game and recommending to you guys pixel artists?
So we've been showcasing this version of LC since 2019. We went to PAX West 2019, spoke to a bunch of publishers. A lot of them kind of just ghosted us after that. Okay, that's okay. So then we went to PAX East 2020. That was like a week before COVID lockdown. Before COVID lockdown. But at PAX East 2020, at PAX East 2020, we showcased again on the PAX Rising section. Again, a bunch of publishers come up to us. But then one of the guys that a couple of people that I follow on Twitter, one of them was Bannon Rudis. He's I think it was the director of River City Girls 2 for Wave 4. Mm-hmm. Swung by the booth and he was like, oh, man, this looks great. And I was like, oh, man, thank you. You know, we're a big fan. He kind of disappeared. We were still in the show. And then like at some point later, I don't know if it was that same day or like the day after, he brings Gerard over and he's like, holy shit, like this game looks incredible. This is probably one of the best games, like one of the best looking games that I've ever seen. And, you know, good job, guys. And we're like, bro, awesome. Thank you. In a separate occasion, his friend and I guess one of the creative directors or like one of his producers on like his channel, Mike, came through, loved the game. And then he's like, hey, would you guys like to be a part of IndieLand, which is a charity that he does every year for dementia research? And I'm like, yeah, sure. That'll be amazing, right? So whatever, PAX ends. Then this whole, you know, COVID happens, everything's locked down, whatever, all the publishers disappear. But we do IndieLand that year. And I was like, oh man, that's really cool. You know, we did IndieLand. After IndieLand, the development on the game really kind of slowed down, but you know, we're still little by little, right, trickling in. And then the next year, right, 2021 at this point, Indyland comes around again and we get invited again. Hey, would you guys like to do Indyland? Sure, no problem. We did Indyland. It was still online. That segment, towards the end of our segment, I kind of mentioned like, hey, we're still looking for a publisher. If anybody's interested, please contact us. And I mean, playing games with Gerard is a huge boost all the time. And, you know, we're eternally grateful. Right after the show, before we got off the call or whatever, he's like, give me till the end of Indyland, which was like, it ended on like that Sunday, and I will connect you guys with somebody. And I'm like, oh, okay, sure. And then, you know, like that Monday, he was like, got on a call and it's like, hey, we're going to have a meeting with the CEO of Playtonic Games like this week. And I'm going to show them the game before you guys talk to them, just so we can kind of, you know, hype it up or whatever. And yeah, and he did. he really did. And, you know, they ended up doing like a joint publishing thing between both of them for Elsie. And that's kind of how I got started.
It's the hype, man. The ultimate hype, man.
Seriously.
Insane. And he's been wonderful, like nothing but kind. I mean, we owe him a lot. We owe him for, you know, helping us kind of land the publisher, helping us finding an environmental artist and Danny Flexner, because we had no environmental artist for like almost 2 years. So we didn't have any new level art for almost 2 years. And we're like, this is the hardest thing that we were looking for. We tried out a couple people that just didn't work out. And he's like, oh, I know, dude, he's awesome. He worked on like a Mega Man completionist, like zine thing. And I'm like, sure, man, let's go. Like, you know, send him over and we'll see what happens. Because the thing about our game, it's like, we tried people that didn't quite nail a particular look or style. Because our game is a little different. And so when we tried Danny, we started him off with a specific thing. And it was like, oh, you know, can you recreate this lighthouse, like this tower in our game? And he kind of did it his own way. And we're like, okay, that doesn't look too bad. And, you know, we kind of went through it and it's a little bit of a different style. And I'm like, you know what? This is pretty good. But then when he really started to do the main levels, I was just like, okay, this guy, like we got it. Because we went a lot of back and forth on what kind of thing we were looking for. And then he's killed it. But yeah, so Gerard really, so after we got signed, this game started pushing forward extremely quickly. Mm-hmm. Like after all that stuff went through, we just started going to town, and it's in a year, it's been like about a year now, like a year and like 2 months since we signed with Playtonic. And it's been huge.
Isn't
like
it amazing what a little bit of support can do?
Yeah, a little bit of support and a little bit of money. Money goes a long way.
I didn't want to start with the money part, you know.
It starts and it ends, but like that's a thing. People, especially audiences, I feel like players, right? Like people that will buy your game, they don't know or they don't want to know just how expensive making a game is. Yeah. How much of a risk?
Huge disconnect. Yeah, there's a huge disconnect. I mean, we've interviewed people who have put who've mortgaged their homes to put a game out, you know, a married couple put, you know, literally their life savings into a game. And it's, you know, it's always, you always get, you know, we run the gamut. We get the stories of, you know, crowdsourcing a game and getting millions of dollars. We get the publisher throws the bag at them, you know, or all the way down to, I did this myself. I put my life savings, and if it doesn't sell 10,000 copies, right, I'm going to work at Starbucks. Like there's
right.
Like you have the gamut of it all. So yeah, it's and that's a lot of the reason why Andy and I do the show, right? Andy, it's like people need to hear these stories. You may be Googling Elsie because it looks dope, or maybe you just played it and you're looking for some, you know, walkthroughs or something. And maybe this interview will pop up and you'll just realize how hard it was that for 7 years, painstakingly making this game and literally changing tile by tile just a year ago to get it to where it's at right now for the demo, you know. Those are the stories that are important.
I
was gonna say, and also we are prepared to co-publish your
co-publish. Yep,
co-publish
for a whopping $10.
$10 that's left in my bank account. Let's do it. I think we can get at least one tile.
And you know what's also kind of hurting that perception too? It's when you have these free games, right? Like the Fortnites or the whatever they are, that offer so much to the player for zero investment other than time. that as an indie developer, you really can't compete with those kind of things.
Yeah.
So you're just hoping that you'll find that niche of people that are happy, you know, like if they're all like $15 is too much for this game that, you know, that I've slaved over, that I'm like 90 something percent of indie games will never make their money back or never recoup anything. They won't sell past like 1,000 copies.
Right. Right.
That's the majority of things that get sold. So to have a hit game that will recoup, you have to, even if you do everything right, you have to get just a little lucky, find the right spot, hit the right chord. Yeah. You know, it's like Among Us went for 2 years without selling anything. When unknown game, one day, one of the most popular streamers on Twitch streams it with his friends. And like a week later, biggest game in the world.
Yeah.
It's been out for 2 years. So it's like, man, sometimes you just get really lucky.
You know? Is that why, like, I would imagine deals like Game Pass are more enticing now to indie devs because they can recoup a huge chunk of their costs?
Game Pass is really good for a lot of indies because most indies will generally not make their money back. And Game Pass usually is enough money to make all the recoup back.
Oh, wow.
But at the same time, you kind of lose out on potential. Like if your game just decides to blow up and it's free on Game Pass, it's like, well, sorry.
Yeah.
Right. But maybe that'll just carry into you into the next game, right?
Oh, well, that's the hope
of this hit game.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I mean, for LC, we've been working on it for a long time. Alex, our main like the owner of the company, it's his project, his baby. We've been at this for a while. And at this point, like we just want to get it done. Hopefully it does well. We have a ton of ideas for like either like us like DLC or like standalone DLC and like spin-offs, like a lot of things. The project has a lot of legs. And we've built a very strong foundation, but it really is dependent on how it does.
Yeah, so. It needs to do well now because I feel like
now it needs to do well.
If you have like an elaborate roadmap, I feel like fuck.
Yeah.
Please be mega successful. I want to see because I love this game, how it plays, how it looks, the whole vibe. And knowing that there's DLC plans and there's add-ons and shit you're thinking about that I may not see, I cannot comprehend that. It's not.
I
that's
feel...
when we step in, Steven, to publish.
Yeah, we have
will fund the DLC.
Yeah, we have a couple of DLCs that are already planned out, but there is one specifically, one idea that if we do not. If the game does not do well, or we can't, you know, we cannot continue, we're probably going to take it to like Kickstarter or another publisher.
Sure.
And it's a standalone DLC. It's not a long thing. It's a small sure. game. Because I feel a lot of games these days, you know, it would be as small as Mega Man X, which you can beat in 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right? But
if you know what you're doing.
You're right. Right. Exactly. If you know what you're doing. So that's one that I'm telling you, man, if we're not able to do it for whatever reason, we're going to take it to the Kickstarter or something.
Some of us have been playing Mega Man X for 25 years and still haven't beaten it. So, you know,
there you go.
You can't be
You're way past the return time on Steam.
Yeah, no, I've never beaten Mega Man X. I don't think I've ever beaten a Mega Man, to be honest.
Nuh-uh. I don't believe that for a minute.
Really? You've seen me play video games, Andy.
I've seen you beat some Mega Man bosses before.
Sure.
There's video. It exists.
I believe you
not being ass at Mega Man.
I guess so. I don't remember it, but
okay.
But speaking
you'll beat LC and then you can
maybe
you can take that.
But speaking of, one of the things that really amazes me sometimes is when Andy picks up a game that he's never played before, but it's so clearly in the exact like genre, it's in his muscle memory, and that's my barometer for whether or not you're doing it right. Is if Andy dies instantly for a second, and then the second run, it just clicks in his brain, and everything's muscle memory. Like that to me is the markings of taking the genre and doing right by it. It's watching Andy play these games. Andy, you could speak obviously more on that, but how did it feel for you, Andy, getting your mitts on this thing that is very clearly inspired by a genre you would put your peen inside of if it was a possibility?
I would just Slapped across the face. Well, it was really interesting hearing Pedro say that the game is designed to have you play overly aggressive. When I'm playing roguelites and Mega Man, I tend to play rather passively because it's all about conserving your life. And in this game, when you shoot, when you dash, you're burning energy. So you got to balance all of that with the action. And the idea of like launching head first is like the way to play. My hands aren't built for that. But now that I know this, I feel I'm better equipped to kick ass.
So the game, you can play it passively, but as it progresses, some bosses are going to force you to use that parry a lot more.
Yeah, that's, me and timing don't go well together. But fortunately at PAX, I was, I think I melted that boss in like 2 seconds.
No,
I had a really good, loadouts.
Great build.
The synergies were amazing.
We have a sneaky suspicion that early on, some people will enjoy the game, some people will find it a little difficult, but it's one of those games where like, it's not one of those games that like, oh, a bunch of copies are going to sell, and then it just kind of like tapers off. It's going to be one of those games, I think Alec kind of thought about it this way, like it's going to start off maybe rather tame, rather small, and then as people play it, and as people get used to it, and maybe hopefully people like will start streaming it, and people will start like making videos and content, or whatever, that it's going to ramp up as it, because it builds a lot on itself. And I mean, it's not the biggest game in the genre. It's not like, you know, the infinite of whatever, right? But it is just a little bit like different, right? Sure. If you just really take the time to like really come down and be like, okay, like this game, like what is this game about? And you know, we try to do things a little differently. I wish you had more resources.
How do you ease like, I don't know if you have a tutorial or if it's just like how the game naturally ramps up, but how are you going to get a player that might be expecting a Mega Man X style play, and how are you teaching them to not give up?
So roguelikes, I think, have this kind of issue where it's difficult to do that. Cause for example, Mega Man, those game, the levels never change. You know exactly how they're, you know, how they're intended to do certain things.
And you memorize patterns and, you know.
Right. Yeah. Right. For us, when you start the first level, the first run, the first chunk of that first level is going to be like a tutorial that you'll see like that one time. Right. But then after that, the levels, the early rooms start off a little simpler, right? They have like one or two enemies, very simple, you know, straightforward enemies. And then after like a couple rooms, you get like an arena room where it closes and you have to beat a couple waves. And then after that, then it's okay, these rooms are going to be a little bit harder now. Like a couple more enemies started showing up in these rooms, and we kind of pace it like that. At some point, the player is going to have to really just be, they're going to have a harder time than the game actually is if they just don't parry. If they don't parry, they're gonna be like, man, this game is super difficult. And we try to promote the parry in as many things as we can. Because I think that's like our biggest.
Can you give an example?
Like, well, for one, almost every video that we show, it's like you're seeing a parry somewhere, right? In the tutorial, you can't pass a piece of the tutorial unless you parry. Like, you just won't be able to go through it. But a lot of people will forget that. A lot of people just straight up ignore that. So it's what you're probably going to be hitting. I think the first boss, the first level's boss, which I think is like a soul, right? It's like a little, I don't know which boss you ended up seeing, because we had two in the first level. In the demo, we had Soul and Luna.
The
both
big
of them,
one.
If like yeah, right, the, yeah. There's one that was like a circular, like this. Yes. And one was like a yellow thing.
It was a big circle thing that I melted in 2 seconds.
Yeah. So, so if you don't have like an insane build, both of them will require the player to parry to not take as much health. And a lot of people freak out when they see the first boss because they're like, "Oh my god, what was that?" And it's like, "Did you parry? Oh, whoops! You know, I don't know." And start again. And then just as they'll start working at it, the first level is like all the rooms are built in such a way that it's like, okay, you have to really try like certain like enemy placements where like, okay, if this enemy like shoots here and this coming at you here, like it's better to parry than anything else, right? But if you don't do it, you're gonna get hit, right? And at some point you're gonna have to kind of learn. But it is difficult. It is a difficult thing to do, especially in roguelike games, how to teach the player. And I mean, I think that's what kind of drives people away sometimes, where it's very, some roguelikes take a long time to really like ramp up. For me, I think one of the best ones, for me, I don't even play roguelikes. I don't like roguelikes. I liked, that's this whole thing. I loved Hades.
Yeah, Hades, I was just going to say, Hades is like the perfect, you know, hand-holding.
Yeah, they do well. They do super well.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, what the hell the fireflies in this game do?
Oh, cool. So the fireflies are these bullets that you spawn, but after a couple seconds, if there's enemies around you, they'll home into the enemy.
Gotcha.
Right.
But they're just hanging out, doing nothing.
Yeah, they're hanging out. If you get a, there's a specific augment that says that when you dash through an enemy, it basically tags them, and any fireflies on the screen will hit, will also go through the enemy. Also, firefly damage scales with like spell power. So if you up your spell power, there's like items and parts that will up your spell power, and they get really strong really fast. And then it's like there's an augment that says if you parry, you'll summon like 5 or 7 fireflies. If you counterattack, you'll summon some more. So you can go into like a weird parry build where like, okay, you're summoning all these things, and then you dash through an enemy, and they're just gonna. And there's somewhere there's another augment that lets bullets pass or like pierce or pass through walls, so they won't dissipate until a couple hits. So if you get like a bunch of fireflies that are going through an enemy twice, they'll just loop around, so you just get like this a swarm.
That's also, I feel like, the other major perk is like there's a metric ton of abilities and weapons. Yeah. Like I was like doing this dash where I spat a boomerang out of my enemy, or these like this spread shot thing with freeze bullets. It's like the amount of things you can acquire in this game and like have to ponder the, okay, do I drop this and get this? It's insane. Talk a little about how you guys create these augments and making them super fun.
Yeah, I mean, so all that credit I really have to give to Alex. It's been something that he's been tinkering for years. So initially, we don't have that many items per se, like parts, right? Like regular items. We have, I think, like 100, 110 or something. We want to add more as production on the art and all the heavy stuff winds down on the systems. We're probably gonna add more items. But augments, initially we have 35 per class, right? Currently there's 2 playable characters in the game. There's a melee character and the ranged character, which is Elsie. Each of them have 35 augments in their augment pool, which I think 30 of them are unique to each class. And Alex tailor-made those to give you flexibility in build. So like augments make your parry better. Some augments make your dash better. Some augments make your dive better. Some augments make some of your bullets like homing, or they bounce off walls before they disappear, or they stay in the air, right? And they'll stay there for a little, so they can add like mini like grenades until they disappear. He's really gone deep into making each augment impactful and unique. And then we added, there's something more recent that we added 2 more levels to each augment, so you can upgrade them twice. They'll also, sometimes they're just like a, I guess like a number game, but sometimes it changes like their mechanic, or really augments their mechanic. So that's, if you take 35 times 3, you know, that's another like 100, like 110 items or something, 115 items, 105 items, 105 items.
That's
more.
Math. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you doing math, Steve?
No, there's a weird.
Steve's doing the math.
So I heard a noise coming from my backyard, and I see this weird. It looks like a fake flame, kind of pulsating, like in the backyard. I'm like, I just text my dad, "What the hell is that?" And it should be. Is it a real flame? And should we be concerned?
It's the aliens are here.
Like, I can't tell what that is, but anyway. Listen, man, synergies, augments, I'm all about it, and. It actually entices me to play these games a little bit more because I have the memory of a fucking earthworm. Like, I just don't know what's happening in my life from moment to moment. So like playing a Mega Man game,
you set the fire in your backyard.
I'll give you an example. I recently beat Super Mario World with a friend of mine, and him watching me play was the highlight of my night, because hearing his reactions to my stupidity and like him being like, "You just died there, like the last run, you know that guy comes from there," and I'm like, "Sorry, man, I already forgot. I have no idea. I'm purely going by the seat of my pants." So this genre, this twist on the action platformer actually benefits me a little bit, because I don't have to rely on remembering how to beat a level. It's more like I could improvise a little bit, figure shit out.
Yeah. Yeah,
get a cool augment and
I think that's the beauty of like the roguelike genre, right? Like Dead Cells does it in a similar way. 30XX, which is another big one. Shout out
former guest of the show, awesome game. We love
CK. CK is great. He's our homie. These games have really changed the experience. Like before, it's like you play a Mega Man game, cool. It has like 7-8 levels and then a couple extra levels at the end. You're done. This is like, oh yeah, cool. We have like 7-8 levels you can replay over and over because every time it's different and your loadout's different and your weapon's different and the synergy that you're building with your thing is different, right? Like Isaac, game is insane, but people have to play with the second monitor with all the items there because the items on the screen don't tell you anything. So it's really opened up the gates.
Yeah.
And like I said, what we're doing is fairly tame, but with just enough spice that I haven't seen in other roguelikes, right? Like our base is the same, right? Like, oh, right. Side-scroller action platformer. We love it. Been playing it for many years. But this one wants you to play a little different than like 30XX or Dead Cells, right? Or, you know, there's some new ones that I was playing recently. Have a Nice Death. Super awesome. Game looks insane. Game looks crazy. The art in the game is astounding. And it's like, how can we be different given our very limited resources, our very limited time? We've been working on this game part-time for many years. Most of our publisher like funds just went to the art team, like solely just for the art team, essentially. Me, Alex, we're just kind of just doing it, you know, to do it while we work full-time jobs, right? Because that's the dream. And yeah, man, it's like how can we do something that will stand out? And I'm glad that it has been standing out. I'm really glad that we're kind of succeeding on that front. And now we just need like that little bit of luck on release to like for it to really blow up.
It's insane to think that a game that looks as well as this does has limited resources, because I was staring at the reflection on the water for a good 10 minutes because it's the jaw dropped. Like, how is that possible in a pixel art game to look that clean and that well polished?
And it looks really like the animation is really good too. Everything looks really good in motion.
Yeah, we were very picky with our animations too, and we're really glad that we also got this artist. His name is Fernando. He's from Argentina. Many before the publisher, we were looking for animators to help us animate. We found him and another animator, Lenu, I think is his name. He's from France. He started making some animations, and we got Fernando. Fernando was just insane. And it's crazy because at some point Fernando had to stop working with us. He took like a small break from like working on games or whatever. And it wasn't until a year later till we got the publishers back. Or so we got published that we reached out to him. He's like, hey man, would you happen to have any openings? This was after we got Danny. We already got Danny. It's like, awesome, our environments are gonna be sick. So now we need an animator. And I'm like, bro, we have not found an animator better than this guy. And he's awesome. He speaks Spanish. We speak Spanish. I'm from Cuba. Alex is born in Miami, but he comes from like a Hispanic parents or whatever. So we all kind of speak Spanish, most of us. I was like, he fit right in. We called him. He's like, oh yeah, you know, I got a little bit of availability. I have like 10 or 15 hours a week that I can put. And we're like, let's go. Let's do it. We're running this right now. And it was just him and Danny working on the art for almost a year until recently we got a tech artist to help us do a lot of the new effects. A lot of the stuff you guys saw on the demo, all the UI, all the menus, that's all brand new. And it wasn't even completely done, but those are all brand new. Her bullets, a lot of her effects, those are all done by our effects artist, Tim. He also worked on a roguelike game called Revita, which has been out.
Oh, my God.
Oh, we love Revita.
One of our favorites.
Yeah, so yeah, Ben is also another homie. And Tim worked on Revita for a while, and he did a bunch of art for it. And in the past like couple months, he's been working with us to make a lot of the effects for all our enemies, Elsie, all her spells. Yeah. Yeah, so we've gathered a crack team.
I love all the cross-pollination between indie devs. It severely warms my heart. Like, are y'all talking?
6 degrees of dual screens podcast. That's what it feels like.
Dope ass games.
all the time. I mean, when we kind of. So when I took over the Twitter for Elsie, There was a couple games in the Twitter sphere that also started coming out kind of at the same time that we did, right? Revita, right? Ben. And I was already following Ben from way before. And I was like, oh man, this guy's cool. So him, Berserk Boy, right? Zoo and
oh my god.
That's another
great one.
Yeah. Zoo. We kind of came up around the same time. We have like our own chat. And then my guy's from Anton Blast. Tony's from Miami. As well,
we know all of these people.
We have like our own.
We've
like,
spoken
our own, like,
to all of these people.
We've hugged Tony.
Yeah, Tony was there. The guys from Renane as well. Those right across from Anton Blast.
Okay, Renane.
Corner.
Is that game ever gonna come out? Is it out? It's been like 20 years.
It's not out yet. Squiddy. That's another game that Gerard's publishing as well.
Mm.
Oh. And yeah, we were kind of like he was already kind of in talks for that one. We were the first ones to like legit sign, and then he got them on board. I hope so, bro. Squiddy's working on that game for so long, and
yeah,
it's really awesome. And a lot of the art, like the artists on that team too, are spectacular. JD and Garami are incredible. And Squiddy's just crazy at programming. So
that's that game. I've seen it evolve over the last like I want to say eight packs East.
Yeah, it's
the graphics, how they've changed over the last decade.
Yeah. And what's crazy that they've changed, but they've kept the same style.
Yes.
They've just refined it, made it better.
Mm-hmm.
Like it evolved into something awesome. All these guys, we have a few small like indie groups. I really got to meet more like Ben and some of these guys because of Indieland. Because they're they'd seen our game, we've seen their game on Twitter, we kind of chat back and forth, but it wasn't until like Indieland so we just started chatting, and it's just like, oh man, yeah, we're homies. It's a big crew now.
I love it.
Love story.
I smell a PAX panel coming soon,
dude. I wish
all these guys.
Yeah.
So what's crazy, when I first started in game development, right, one of my things, I love speaking to people, I love speaking to an audience. It's always people that want to know how to get into the industry. I feel that's not something that was easily found for me. So when I first went to like my first packs, I was like, holy shit, this is so crazy. I had just only started to want to make games, right? And already had gathered a couple friends. And I'm like, hey man, we have this idea. But I went there to learn. And then the year after, I went to go with my friend. And we went to like all the talks we could. This dude's name is Dan Adelman. Which works as one of the producers.
Animal Well.
Animal Well.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's another one.
So PAX East, I think 2014, I went to his talk on Indies. This was right after he left Nintendo and he was working with Axiom Verge. He did a talk on indie, what to do and not to do when you want to, in Indies. And his computer didn't work. I do IT as my day job at a university. So that year, I went up on stage and I was like, I'm going to help you. Make sure that your rig works. And every time I see him in PAX, I show him the picture. And I was like, this is me. Remember me. And so I saw him again this year. And I was like, yeah, dude, remember me? And I showed him the picture.
Make a note. We're going to tag him in this.
Dude, yeah, no. And he's great. He's an awesome dude. And I'm really glad that he's working at Animal Well. And I'm really glad that Animal is, God Donkey. And they're doing hot. So, but yeah, man. I mean, it's a small community at the end of the day. You will be surprised how many people know people.
I love it. Andy,
yeah.
It's time to slip into something comfortable, and that something comfortable.
We've spoken to all the people in the indie game.
that something comfortable is, of course, our rapid fire section of the show, where we get to know Pedro just a little bit more, or Pedro, depending on how sexy I feel like being at the moment.
True,
but Pedro,
language of love,
indeed. Pedro, I'm going to start us off.
True.
I see guitars behind you.
Yeah.
If you picked up a guitar, what's the first chord you strum? Just to hear what it sounds like. You're just like.
Honestly, A minor. A minor is probably the.
A minor is a sexy chord.
Yeah. A minor, then C, right?
C major
is always a nice one.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of those two.
I go with
those
G usually. Mm-hmm. A G seventh sustained, I usually kind of go with. But yes. All right, Andy. Mm-hmm.
I think we're on the same algorithm, Steve. I have a similar question for Pedro.
Oh, interesting.
Pedro, when you pick up the guitar, what song do you play to show off at parties?
Oh.
Oh my god, dude. sometimes one of my favorite bands, Thrice. a couple songs from them. The Beatles, Day Tripper as well, my go-to.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I like Day Tripper. Here Comes the Sun sometimes. As I started learning, what's another one? Blackbird. Blackbird's another pretty one. For like a softer party.
Can you sing Day Tripper while doing that riff? Because I find it impossible.
I'm not sure. I haven't tried in a long time. But I find it very difficult to sing.
That's fair.
And do specific, like specific strumming patterns.
Yeah. It's very confusing.
I have like one strumming pattern that I can sing to, but if I start changing it up, I would just get confused.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I'm mediocre at best.
Florida, is now a no training necessary open carry state. And so I have a question for you, Pedro.
Hit me.
Where do you keep your gun?
If you could open carry anything that's not a weapon, what is in your holster?
Oh my God, if I can open carry anything?
So you're open carrying, but it's not a gun or a knife or sword.
Or a weapon?
What are you carrying?
Bro,
what's in your gun holster?
Probably a snack. So I'm going to snack on.
Like a big ass granola bar? Or like what are we talking about?
Bro, honestly, bro, like a Twix.
A Subway.
Oh, okay. You're just gonna open carry a king size Twix in that six shooter holder. Dude. I'm down with that.
That's right.
I like that.
Hershey's cookies and cream bar. Mm.
Oh, so good.
That is. Why is that the best candy bar that ever existed?
Dude, I don't know, man. They're so good.
I love that, and a bag of chips is like the ultimate snack for me.
At the same time, right? Like sweet and salty.
Yes. Yeah. You go back and forth in both of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Have you had the potato chip filled Reese's cups? Have you had those?
Potato? No.
They have potato chip crunches inside the peanut butter.
Oh. I don't know how I feel about that.
It's weird, but it was okay. Like, it wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
My wife wasn't a fan. She's like the peanut butter cup connoisseur.
Interesting.
But I was all right with it. I fuck with that.
Like, that I'll do them both at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like,
right. But inside each other? I don't know.
Weird. Whose turn is it? It's your turn. Andy, you go.
We'll do two questions. Two-parter.
Okay, two-parter.
Pedro, which Mega Man X boss do you most identify with?
Oh, my God. Which? It's a great question. Mm-hmm. I'm always down for some Chill Penguin.
Oh my God.
Chill Penguin.
You seem very Chill Penguin.
Just now, frosty, dude.
That's frosty. It's chill out, bruh. Now, the second part is, if you were an original Mega Man X boss, what would your name be?
Oh my God. That's a great question. I don't know, but it'd have like a riff with like war.
I was just going to say riff.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But it has to be something with war in it, simply because my last name in Spanish means war. Guerra.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it would be like, I don't know, like the War Machine or something.
Mm. Well, like would it have to be like some sort of animal? Like, aren't they animals?
We need like an animal.
Yeah.
So what? Warthog.
Walrus. Or like a war, but a walrus, but instead of a walrus, it's a warless.
Yeah, I like this.
Or a warthog also.
That's what I'm saying. A warthog.
Honestly, I don't think they've done a warthog enemy. So yeah, dude, I think.
And he's got a guitar and he's like, shooting off the, like, oh man,
Riffer Warthog. That's the name.
Yeah, Riff Warthog. Like,
yeah.
I just realized, but I may have dropped a hint as one of the enemies in our game.
Uh oh.
That has not been shown yet.
Uh oh.
Okay. That's okay.
Scoop. We love breaking the scoops here on Dual Screens Podcast.
I think the next trailer that we're gonna bust out, you'll probably see him, and we're like, oh, we heard that guy.
We knew that. We knew about it.
We knew that.
Eat your heart out, IGN.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Yes. Pedro.
So stupid.
Is cereal a soup?
Mm.
Ooh, depends on the soup. I'm more of a cereal person than soup, but I do like my tomato bisque.
But is cereal a soup?
Oh, is cereal a soup? Man, I don't know.
That's so fair.
You can technically make soup like with some like ingredients of cereal.
Right.
Like you can mix, you know, but I mean, I don't like what I like. We're like, I feel it depends on the soup, right? Because like you can make some soups with milk, but they kind of turn a little beefy. They're more like what do they call it? Like a curry, I guess, when you try to make like a soup with milk,
like a coconut cream, kind of like a
Exactly.
Coconut milk, it's kind like, of thing going on.
Right. Mm-hmm. And like, so I think they're kind of like an in between. It's almost like, oh, it's a hot dog, a sandwich. Oh.
So if you add enough spices to a cereal, it could become a curry, which is a soup.
Yeah.
Anything's possible in Final Fantasy.
True. Speaking of 16.
Coming up. Oh my God, Pedro. See, I put my dick in that game all day long. Oh,
bro, all day. Fuck, I can't wait.
Fuck me in that game.
That is a good ass game. So good ass looking game.
Pedro. Hell yeah. What is a childish thing that you still enjoy doing as a grown ass man?
You mean besides playing video games? Or I mean, honestly, we're in the generation that it was childish to play video games, but then as we've gotten older, now it's become an old person thing to play video games. That's our generation. We're the ones that really
it's a weird dichotomy. I tell you that.
I'm gonna be 34 in like a couple months. Exactly in a couple months. Yeah. We grew into that. Other than that, though, childish things, man. That's a great question. I feel like this is like the most that I got. I like to go sleep at the beach, but I guess little kids, when they're tired, they just take a nap at the beach. That's all I go to the beach for.
Okay.
But like otherwise, I don't know. I don't tinker with too much.
Listen, things. I think napping in public is a nice thing. It's a very childlike thing to do. We'll take it.
Right? I love it. I love napping.
I do it all the time.
At the beach, it's great. So good.
All right. I'm going to give you one more question here, and then Andy will take us home with the final question.
No, I want to ask him one more, though.
But I have to ask Andy something first.
Okay.
Are we cake worthy?
Oh, good Lord. That's a segue from asking a childish question.
Uh-huh. Are we cake worthy, Andy?
Okay. How about this? I'll ask him a question.
Okay.
And then I'll ask him. And then you ask him the cake question.
Okay.
And then we'll do the last question.
Okay, fair. Go ahead.
Okay. Pedro, I spied a Dark Knight poster behind you there.
Oh yeah.
What is your favorite part from that movie?
Bro, my favorite part from that movie, oof.
Besides the movie, all of it.
And there's actually a really cool story about that poster. I won in a raffle when the movie hit theaters in college. It was a raffle at my school, and signed up with a Batman shirt. Like 3 weeks later, they were like, "Oh, by the way, you won." Crazy. which is funny, because when I got the tube, it was another poster that was in it. It was an Indiana Jones and Temple of Skulls, and I was kind of sad. I was like, "Oh man, I thought I won the Dark Knight one." But then I pulled it out to show somebody else, and then I looked inside the tube, and there was another one. And I was like, "Yeah!" And that was crazy. That was insane. But yeah, best part of that movie, bro, when the Joker walks into Harvey Dent's hospital room, he's already burnt. He's already two-faced.
Yeah.
And he takes off his mask and he goes, "Hi." like
my bad.
Yeah, right. Like,
sorry.
That shit gets me every single time. Man. I was just like, incredible.
Since that's one of my favorite movies of all time, Andy, if you don't mind, I would like to answer that question as well.
Should we all answer it? Then yeah, you go.
It is by far when he infiltrates the mob boss meeting. When Joker not even like that's part of it, but like how quickly he goes from unintimidating to terrifying. In one scene where you're just like, oh, that's why they are terrified of this man, and he doesn't even have to really do anything.
Dude, I mean, I was already there from the opening scene. I was just like, this is one of the greatest opening scenes I've ever seen.
The only thing that sucked about that opening scene for me, from a personal reason, was they had that the Aurora shooting during the opening. We were all so high strung for the beginning of that movie. Like, we were just looking to the exits, we were like just like looking around, and the sound in that scene is so eerie because it has that high pitch off-putting little string
sequence.
So it was like I was really uncomfortable, and then once the next scene kicked in where, you know, all that was over, like my adrenaline kind of
settled down. Seems wild.
And but it was just a weird
that time. That was just a lot.
It was so weird to be like, we live in New York, so it was like, we're used to all the bullshit.
Really? Where at?
Me and my wife is pregnant.
My wife.
Congratulations, my wife. Man.
GG's.
Thank you. Yeah, so we're taking the trip before she's no longer allowed to travel.
Heard that.
Just to New York City. We go to New York City. We've gone pretty often. It's just a good time. We like to go eat. Just walk around.
Hit us up on the Twitter.
Come on, we'll go buy you a drink.
Damn. We'll get your congratulations.
Why not?
Yeah, man. I'm down.
All right, so now switching gears violently into another lane.
Wait, I want to share my Batman memory. Where I like.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. Go ahead. Sorry.
Really simple, really easy. It's when he blows up the hospital, when he's like fiddling with the detonation.
Yeah, that was super funny.
And he's like waddling away like a 5-year-old boy. Like just.
Supposedly.
It's all the physical acting. And just the way he did it was just.
Did you know that that was improvised? Like the bomb just didn't go off?
I'm not surprised.
The bomb supposedly didn't go off when he pressed the button. So he stayed in character, trying to like smash the button.
That's a good actor, man.
They also really blew up a hospital.
Oh yeah,
that was going to be demolished anyway. So they're like, let's do it for the movie because Nolan's a fucking madman.
R.I.P. to a real one, Heath Ledger.
Yeah, he had the whole world in the palm of his hands after that movie came out. He would have been bigger than anything Marvel could. Oh man, Robert Downey Jr. would have nothing on him. Money wise,
it was just different, bro. It was different. That performance was just different. And what's crazy, I love Batman, right? My favorite superhero. I thought The Dark Knight was incredible. Every so often, I'm like, man, like why was this movie so good? And then I watch it again, and I'm like, I know why it was so good. Every time I watch it, I'm like, okay, yeah, no, it's still as good as everybody, you know, as everybody collectively thinks it is. It didn't get nominated for an Oscar for best movie, which is horrendous, but whatever, you know.
Yeah,
the same.
All right, Pedro,
terrible.
Here we go. We have deemed you cake worthy.
He's cake worthy.
Oh god, what is happening?
It is here's the question. Would you rather eat a dick flavored cake or a cake flavored dick?
These are the hard questions.
Now that we know you're married and have a child on the way.
This is a great question.
This adds layers. Yeah,
he'll be like, ask me again when I see you in New York.
Yeah, right? It's too much.
Dick-flavored cake. Cake-flavored dick.
I like cake. I don't particularly like dick. So like,
I know that's the dichotomy. That is the crux of the question. Mm. That is the classic catch-22 here.
Oh, damn, dude. I guess I have to go with a dick-flavored cake because at the end of the day, it's still cake. So how bad can it actually be, right?
Yeah. Well.
Just saying.
Okay. All right, listen. There are a lot of flavors that come with a dick. That's all I'm saying.
True. True.
There's
no one's different.
Things happening in there that are weird. But now, another dick question. Andy. Hit us with the final question of the show.
Dick-ish question is what it is. If things couldn't get any harder, talking about dicks and the cakes that taste like dicks. This is the last question of the hour. It is the most difficult question of your entire life.
Entire life.
Brace yourself. Okay, Pedro?
Yeah.
Simple yet difficult. Complex. Yeah. Yet also simple.
What do you got?
Andy or Steve?
Huh.
He's thinking.
I don't know. There's too many signals.
Dick cake.
Steve's favorite movie is The Dark Knight. I don't know. What do you got?
He likes some horror shit.
I got a bunch of Mega Man shit behind me back there, if that's any indication.
Man, that's right. Oh man, see, I guess like you guys, like each of you fulfill a different part. So like it's tough to choose. Yes.
My dick also tastes like cake, if you're wondering.
I am known as that child on the internet.
Look at this man. I don't know. That's a hard one. That one I don't know. I don't know if I can answer that question.
Wow.
It's too difficult.
He's genuinely torn. I feel it.
We will interrogate you in person, maybe.
We're gonna have to ask you.
That's right.
It'll make for a great TikTok when we see you.
Indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, that is going to bring us to the end of this beautiful show. What a great time this was. If you want to follow us on social media, we're at Duel_Screens. I'm at BatChild27. Andy is at Pants Guy. Pedro, where can Pants everybody guy. Find you? And where can everybody find Elsie and all the fun stuffs?
For me, you can I'm on Twitter at Pedro_M_War. And then for anything else related, at Night Shift Team. We could not get Night Shift Games because of one single letter, so we have to get Night Shift Team. You can also see wishlist LC on Steam, which is kind of where, so our Twitter is like our biggest thing, and then you can wishlist on Steam. Hopefully, you know, LC will be out later this year on Steam and Switch, and hopefully other consoles.
Dope. Well, thank you, Andy. Thank you, Pedro. Thank you, listeners. And remember, folks, if you want to support us on Patreon with your hard-earned dollars, you can. Go to patreon.com/dualscreens, or no, DS Pod Dual Screen. It's been a while.
We'll put the links where they need.
I don't know. I'm so used to just doing the show on autopilot, and I usually do that in the beginning of the show that now I'm like doubting
How
myself. Patreon.com/DS Podcast. There we go. Oh, dual screens.
No, dual screens.
It is. It's dual screens. It's dual screens. You're right.
Come on. Now.
You're right. Wow, it's been a while, and I'm tired. It's been a long freaking since PAX. Let me tell you. Yes. And we want to thank our Patreon producer, Colton the Apprentice Nestler, which is why I do this whole spiel anyway, to give him his props for being a producer for the show. So thank you, Colton. We love you.
So much love. And also, indeed. Kitties.
Yep. Yeah.
Get the demo of LC.
Oh yeah, LC demo right now.
LC's demo on Steam is outdated. It'll play okay. But we're updating our demo very soon.
Like very soon. Okay, so play it now and then play it when it's changed.
Yeah, and then you're going to let me know how it is.
Hell yeah.
You're right.
Dope.
It's going to be crazy.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for watching and listening. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Pedro. Thank you, listeners. And as always, please be excellent to each other.